Holy smoke. Wow. It's not our usual music, but we're here. Or at least I am. And Abe, oh, here he comes. Ladies and gentlemen, he's coming into the studio now. The crowds are going wild. It's Abe Proctor, world famous talk show host on a beautiful day here in...
Thank you. What city are we in?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyway, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is Talk Radio with me. I'm Joe Uris, and that over there is Abe Proctor. And, of course, the number to call is 231-8187. But we got so much to talk about.
Yes.
We really do.
We do.
I don't know.
I'm really mad about something. You don't seem quite as mad.
I'm not. I don't have your sense of rage and outrage. I just am more cynical and, you know, kind
jaded.
Of...
jaded.
Buddhist.
I understand.
Buddhist. Not jaded, Buddhist.
So here's our dilemma. Do we give them the anger now and then mitigate it with less anger later? Or do we work up and get people really mad by the end of the show?
Well, you know, this is really the kind of stuff that should have been decided a long time before this moment. But I'll tell you what. Why don't you start and I'll follow.
All right.
You're wrong.
All right. There is a song making its way around the internet, written and performed by an American Marine stationed in Iraq. He's unidentified at this point, but identifies himself as a Marine, and his the audience are Marines as well. It's called Haji Girl, and it's essentially a love song. It's about a Marine in Iraq under attack, and he flees. You know, he scatters to try to save his life, and he dives into a Burger King. That happens to be in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And in
the typical Iraqi Burger King.
And while he's in the Burger King, he makes eye contact with a beautiful young Iraqi woman and has love at first sight.
I see.
And this is the Marine song that he
wrote. So far that sounds okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's nice. Huh? Yeah. A little cross-cultural touchstone there. A little understanding.
Sure.
Right. So this is what she says to him in the Burger King. Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad, Sherpa Sherpa Bakala. And he says, Haji girl, I can't understand what you're saying. And she said, Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad, Sherpa Sherpa Bakala. And he says, Haji girl, I love you anyway. So the song continues to tell this love story.
I see.
Right. So she says she wants him to go meet her family. He can't figure out how to say no because he doesn't speak Arabic. So he follows her along. She takes him down an old...
So he's like stupid?
Right, right.
Okay.
He's just an American who's proud that he doesn't speak Arabic.
Well, Americans,
or understand
Americans
the culture of the people he's killing.
Yeah, Americans, with the exception of those of us who actually have a tradition of another language, are very proud of the fact that we don't speak anything but English.
Right.
It's important.
Right. It's very important.
Part of our culture.
Yeah, it's an American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
Everybody should learn to speak our language.
Yes.
Right. So, but I'm getting off the track here.
Sorry.
The track in this case leads down to this woman's house. So he goes into the house and he meets her family.
Yeah.
And he says, this is the song again. She pulled up to a side shanty and she threw open the door and I hit the floor because her brother and her father shouted, Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad, etc., etc. They pulled out their AKs so I could see. And they said, Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad. So this is the part that really got me.
Yeah.
This is the song here. So I grabbed her little sister and pulled her in front of me. As the bullets began to fly, the blood sprayed from between her eyes, and then I laughed maniacally. Then I hid behind the TV, and I locked and loaded my M16, and I blew those little effers to eternity. And I said, Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad. They should have known they were effing with a Marine.
Okay.
Now... That's not a nice song.
Well, it's come on.
Well, it's a harmless submarine.
No, it's not harmless. It's about the situation of hopelessness that the Marines are in.
No, it's not about the situation of hopelessness. It's about blatant racism. It's about the lack of any attempt to understand a culture, and it glorifies using this little girl as a human shield and watching her die. Now, what really got me about this is I first saw it, this video clip on the internet. And this guy received cheers, wild cheers throughout the song, the loudest of which came when he sang about putting the little girl in front of him and watching the blood spurt from between her eyes.
And what do you make of this?
What do I make of this? This is This is allegedly a war of liberation. We're supposed to be there. This is the party line, Joe. This is what we're telling ourselves and the world. We're there to liberate these people, show them the way to democracy, and here's a jarhead writing a song about a little girl dying because he used her to protect himself. And he's mocking the language, the culture, everything about the people that were allegedly there to protect. And what's more, this is making its way on the internet around the Arab world, and millions of Muslims are going to see this and reinforce every negative stereotype they have about the American occupation.
I think that's great.
You think that's great?
No, I do. I see nothing wrong with deconstructing and creating the reality of American ethnocentrism and of our of the fact that we're an imperial power. There's nothing wrong with that, and I can't see anything that is outside of what's normal in the course of fighting a mysterious enemy about which we have never been trained, about whom we know nothing. This is just par for the course.
Why are soldiers fighting a mysterious enemy about which they know nothing?
Oh, if you're outraged at the policy, which I am too, that's one thing. But you can't not expect this from ordinary soldiers.
Yeah, agreed. But this kind of shoots down the whole support the troops or else maxim that's been tossed around, especially by people on the right. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of very, you know, there's honest, upright servicemen and women there doing their job. But there's also idiots like this.
No, I don't even, honest, upright, doing their job, blah, blah, blah. Look, the reality of the situation is very different than the way in which it's being presented to the American people by the established political parties and the establishment. That you and I and our audience, unfortunately, we frequently speak to the choir of the converted, understand the nature of this war pretty well. We have petty arguments about whether it's just about oil or whether it has some other aspect to it, but fundamentally we understand it as an imperialist endeavor. And we understand the enormous tensions and contradictions that our soldiers are under, and we understand that that's going to be expressed in a variety of ways, many of them quite obscene and nasty. That's par for the course. I think that it's good that nobody in this engagement come away from it with some kind of mythical idea about American helpfulness to the Iraqi people. This song makes that clear. I think that's fine. I think it's unfortunate for the Marines. It's unfortunate for anyone who has to fight in this war. But I don't think there's anything bad about it. And I'm not outraged, and I'm not surprised, and I'm not dismayed.
Yeah, maybe it unmasks the policy, but it's one more stone on an absolutely enormous pile of anti-American sentiment there. This does absolutely nothing.
It's the sentiment of the guys on, and gals on the ground who are under constant attack by a clever and almost invisible at times enemy. It expresses their dismay, their hopelessness, their alienation, their loss of humanity, all the things you would expect to see in soldiers in such a situation.
It doesn't explore their bloodlust?
It's not. You got a gun, you're told to go out and shoot bad guys. Bloodlust.
I don't know.
You joined the Marines.
You joined the Marines.
Bloodlust.
Yeah.
Come on.
You should have heard these people cheer for him.
Well, look, these are people under enormous tension. You cannot expect humanity to survive under these conditions. One of the reasons why we ought to get out of it is for our own souls.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you're expressing the fact that this kind of soullessness has come over these soldiers. And the song demonstrates that.
Oh, yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Like the song. Let's be clear. I don't like the song. I don't think it's a good thing. But I understand it, and I think this is to be expected.
Yeah, it's tragic any way you slice it. This is what's been done to this guy first by the indoctrination that he's undergone in the Marine Corps. And am I denigrating the Marine Corps indoctrination? Yeah, I guess I am. If you're a Marine and you want to call up and yell at me about it, please feel free.
No. I don't think you're. I think that many years ago, the head of the Marine Corps said that the purpose of the Marine Corps is to fight wars. It doesn't make policy. And I think that that's true.
Well, that's the purpose of all the. I mean, that's why we have a civilian-controlled military. So they don't make policy.
Hopefully. What has happened here, though, is we have placed our troops in a situation that is, if not hopeless, incredibly difficult.
Well, indeed.
And this is the tension-relieving behavior of people facing that situation. Are they dehumanized? Obviously. Is it an ugly song? You bet. Does it have racist aspects? Why, sure. Is it absolutely insensitive to The evilness of using human shields? Uh-huh. Is it unexpected? No. It's what I would expect out of soldiers under these circumstances.
Yes,
what makes it different is the fact that we now have enormous numbers of recordings and videos and so on of these kinds of ditties and songs and so on being put out on the web, on the net, a lot these days. Penny Allen's work, which we talked about a year ago,
sure.
For example. This is all happening because we have an oddly open media environment. So that a lot of the stuff that was hidden in previous wars is not hidden. You know, even World War II, the last, as we used to say, good war, had horrible behaviors on all sides.
Yes, of course. I'm not denying any of that. What troubles me here, mm-hmm. Well, there's a number of things that trouble me here. First of all, yes, these Marines have been dehumanized, first by the training that they must, I guess, necessarily go through, and also by the ridiculous conditions that they're asked to endure
I'm not sure their training has anything to do with what you're talking about. I think what it has more to do with is the situation they're in Iraq.
Well, yeah, I think the situation they're in has more to do with
it. And, of course, and I also think that it's a projection of the reality. I really very much doubt that there's much fraternization between men and women, women from the Iraqi peoples and the Marines. I really doubt it.
Yeah, probably not. But what troubles me as well is this guy, when he comes back to this country, is going to need a hell of a lot of help.
Ah, now we're getting down to some
real stuff. He's going to need a hell of a lot of help, and this very administration that has put them in this hellish position has hung them out to dry.
Oh, yeah.
Because it needs to give a tax cut to its benefactors. So this is tragic. And it's tragic because the guy's a pretty good guitarist and singer. But if you want to see this, you can find it on the web at www.littlegreenfootballs.com.
Little Green Footballs?
This is a conservative site, and you can get the bonus here of seeing the proprietors of Little Green Footballs defend this guy on the grounds that, no, it wasn't Marines who killed the little girl in the song. It was the terrorists who killed the little girl in the song. The Marine only grabbed the little girl to use as a human shield.
AK-47 bullets would go right through the girl.
Well, maybe they're growing tough there.
They have bigger. They have a bigger load and a larger hunk of lead than the American gun.
Yeah,
it's so just a little sidebar.
This little song and this little performance is a window into a huge and festering tragedy.
Okay, agreed.
All right,
festering tragedy. From festering tragedy to conceivably hope. Hope, yes. I want to talk about Hope for Oregon Families, which is a petition drive that I think is winding up this week and really needs you out there to have signed it. It's been off of the screen too much. This is a project that's been put together by some really good people, State Representative Mitch Greenlick, State Senator Ben Westland, and State Senator Alan Bates. Now, I mention Westland because he's the independent guy. I'm not particularly supporting him who's running for governor. Yeah. And it's actually suggests the following. I'm just going to read the initiative. It's initiative number 40. Now, there's a lot of initiatives out there, some of them really pretty rotten, one that would destroy the ability of independent parties to function. I mean, it's a lot of scary stuff. It's easy to pass by these initiative drive people who are paid, theoretically, not by the signature, but by the hour. But this one needs your support, and I hope you will go out of your way to sign this initiative. Be it enacted by the people of the state of Oregon. The Constitution of the state of Oregon is amended by creating new sections 46 and 46A to be added to and made part of Article 1. Such sections shall read, Section 46, health care is an essential safeguard of human life and dignity, and there is an obligation for the state to ensure that every Oregon resident has access to effective and affordable health care as a fundamental right.
What does that mean, ensure access?
Well,
is that the same as provide?
Yes. I'm going to finish it,
okay.
And then you'll know exactly what it means. Section 46A, 1. The Legislative Assembly, by law, shall adopt a plan that incrementally expands health care coverage so that every Oregon resident is able to obtain effective and affordable health care on a regular basis. 2. When developing a plan for expanding health care coverage, the Legislative Assembly should consider ways to A, conserve and strengthen the existing health care system to the greatest extent possible, B, conserve and strengthen the existing system to provide health insurance as a benefit of employment. C, encourage individual responsibility for one's own health. D, maximize the use of Medicaid, Medicare, and other federal health care programs. E, encourage the efficient and effective use of health care expenditures. And F, improve the health of every Oregon resident. Number three, the Legislative Assembly shall adopt a plan that incrementally expands health care coverage pursuant to this section, not later than July 1, 2009. Four, this section is repealed December 31st, 2012. So it has a sunset built into it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is important to understand. At basis, the assumption of the right on criticizing so-called socialized medicine all over the world is that it will lead to some kind of unfree health care with long waiting periods and so on. In fact, single-payer health care has no impact necessarily on those aspects. What single-payer care does is simply create a single-payer insurance system overseen by or run by the government. It cuts out the middlemen who waste so much of our health care money. We are the most expensive per capita health care country in the world, and we're not delivering services to so many, 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 many people. The reality is that you still would have your independent physicians, you would still have your health care plans. You would simply have a single payer paying those physicians and health care plans. It's a good idea. This is a start in that direction for Oregon. This needs the support of every person in Oregon. It is sponsored by Democrats and Republicans alike. It has absolutely the potential to change the way in which health care is delivered in a positive way. And I'm hoping that people will sign the HOPE petition and do it today or tomorrow.
Is there a website where people can read more about it?
Is there a website? Good question. I don't have a website. I have to tell you that you shouldn't go. Here. Here's a number. 503-292-223. That's 503-292-2223. And there's sheets that you can get for this, but it needs signatures right away. The time is running out on this thing. If you've already signed it, of course, don't sign it again. But I'm going to actually give these people some time. I'm going to give them a whole 8 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, I think this is so important. I think this is such a crucial issue. It's one of the ways, one of the few ways that we have left to be able to improve the lot of everybody in the state.
And we can do it here at the state level.
We can do it at the state level, and we can make a huge difference. And think of all the people who you all out there know, you may be one of them, who are getting crappy or no health care. Think of the expense of our system. One of the reasons our system is so expensive is that poorer people defer health care till they have to go to emergency rooms, which have two impacts. Number one, well, three, they overcrowd the emergency rooms, which means, number two, that people who really need emergency care have to wait in line with everybody else. And number three, it raises the price of health care to all of us because there's nothing more expensive than emergency care.
No, that's a fact that gets lost in this debate, that the government already is the health care provider of last resort. The
yeah.
Hospitals, by law, are not allowed to deny care to people who need it who come to the emergency room.
And, in fact, we have a crisis in emergency rooms. You know, there are ambulances all over the United States that cruise from hospital to hospital looking for a place to put people who are severely injured or sick. I mean, this is part of an enormous health care crisis. And this, Hope for Oregon Families, is really a way to deal with that. Again, if you can't find a petitioner at your local Freddy's or New Seasons or whatever, you need to call 503-292-2223 and get your name down on one of these petitions. And you need to do it right away, or this thing may fail because it's been under the radar.
Yeah.
Really troublesome to me because it's such a good idea.
Yeah, I just heard about this like last week for the first time.
Yeah. And you know, there's so much evidence that we need this that... Think about the way in which our insurance system works. There's a 20% copay in most of the more expensive insurance plans, mm-hmm. for example. Well, imagine you're an older person and you need 12 grand in medicines. It can happen per month. That could eat your income up, or you wouldn't be able to afford it. Imagine a trip to the hospital.
That would eat most people's income up.
Yeah, well, again, with these copays, a trip to the hospital, 10 grand or more, what are you going to do? 29 million Americans now are in medical debt, and 70% of those were insured when their medical bills began to pile up. So medical health care insurance, just the ordinary insurance, doesn't even take care of that.
And catastrophic medical emergencies are the leading cause of personal bankruptcy
exactly.
in this country. And now it's harder than it's ever been to file for personal bankruptcy, thanks to the Republican Congress.
Well, yes, but the point is, here is a program
yes.
in Oregon that can really make a difference. We need, I need, you need to sign this petition for this plan, which alters the Oregon Constitution to guarantee health care. Hope for Oregon families. Do it. Do it now. And if you want more information, 503-292-2223. Get it done. It's in your interest. That was my...
Well, good. That was much more hopeful than mine.
Well, it was.
there were no human
Yours
shields.
Is filled with hopelessness.
Yeah. No human
and
shields
rage.
In that. No.
No, this is real. I'm gonna bring this up again toward the end of the show because it's so important.
Agreed.
And then, gosh, I have so many things.
Yeah, I do too.
Do you want to go with another thing?
Well, let's give out a number because you know, people. This is talk.
You
radio.
Know, this is talk
right.
radio.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hi,
yeah.
Abe. That's Joe. Talk to us.
Yeah,
you
we'll talk with you. And but, you know what? I want to emphasize this. We would like new callers. We will take old callers, but we really want new callers. We also want to hear from more women. I felt like last time we kind of got dominated by guys, guy talk.
We always do. We always need more women to call.
Well, you should be a lady.
Well, I'll work on that.
Okay. Well, you could.
Yeah, I could.
Here's my knife, dude.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks.
Yeah, right. Now we're going to get criticized.
I also want conservatives today because, you know, I'm in the mood to smack some people down.
You know, so, I want to talk to you about that. You're too mean to conservatives.
Well, I'm not too mean to conservatives.
All
I
right.
am not too mean to conservatives.
You are.
A time for being polite is long past, Joe.
Well, so we're like Hannity or somebody. Hannity, you know, we just beat him up.
Speaking of Hannity, thank you for that.
Okay. Segue.
Fox's Sean Hannity interviewed Vice President Cheney the other day on the phone. Here's how the interview opened. Hannity says, "Well, I got to admit, these are good times for the administration. You got Zarqawi's dead. Revenues are up significantly. The deficit has been cut significantly." That's news to me.
That's a lie.
Yep. "The president went to Iraq. And I'm also told there's some breaking news that a high-value insurgent has been captured in Iraq just now."
Just now.
Cheney says, well, you're ahead of me on that one. I knew about all the other stuff, Sean, but I hadn't heard that one yet.
That's a lie.
And Hannity replies, "See, that's why I'm here, to bring you the good news." Cheney laughs. I didn't know he did that.
Laughs.
"That's right. I got to tune in to Fox every day to find out what's really going on in the world." There you have it.
Big, wet kiss for
yeah.
Fox.
Woo!
All right, 231-8187. Let's go to our first caller.
Nancy. Good morning.
Good morning, Nancy.
Hello.
Nancy, you got a bad line or we got a bad line?
I hear us in the background. Turn down your radio, Nancy.
Oh, well.
All right, well, Nancy, give us another try.
Good morning, Joe. You hear me?
Wait.
Hello?
Nancy? Hello?
Hello?
Mary.
Should I cut off the line? I'll call you back.
No, you're here.
Oh, well.
Oh, wow.
All right, let's go to Mary. Here's what's happening, folks. We now have a delay. For those of you out there who are a little confused by what just happened, we have a tape delay, which is necessary for our transmission these days. We also have a button to get rid of bad talk, but we have a tape delay now. And that means that you have to turn off your radio while you're waiting. It's kind of confusing. I know there's a long wait for our show, so sometimes it's less than perfect. But all of that is necessary for it to work.
Right. So basically, if you call us up, turn your radio down and you won't
At
be
least,
confused.
You know, real low, and then wait until we say hello, Nancy, or whomever.
Right.
Who is our caller now? Do we have a caller now? Yes, we do.
I guess we don't.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
See, all confusion.
Yeah, we are.
All confusion.
We're barely hanging on here.
I think it's good. It shows that we are really volunteer.
Speaking of blowhard Fox commentators. I'm speaking of the White House press secretary.
I'm speaking of
a blowhard Fox commentator.
You're getting snowed, dude.
I'm getting snowed. Tony Snow.
Yes.
Former blow... Well, he's just a blowhard.
Ex-blowhard, now
White
official
House
White
press
House
secretary.
Press secretary.
Interviewed on CNN the other day.
Wait, why would CNN interview a newsie who is now a suck rear end
right.
person
well, because,
for the administration?
That's what the chattering class does. It talks about itself.
Of course it does.
Right. So Tony Snow compared staying the course in Iraq to the Battle of the Bulge in the Second World War.
Really?
Really, yeah. Here's what he said. "The president understands people's impatience, not impatience, but how a war can wear on a nation." He understands that. If somebody had taken a poll in the Battle of the Bulge, I dare say people would have said, wow, my goodness, what are we doing here? But you cannot conduct a war based on polls.
No, that's such a lie.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
That's such nonsense. The Battle of the Bulge, of course, was Hitler's effort to create, actually his army's effort, to create a situation in which they could have a bargained peace which would save Germany.
Yeah.
And, of course, it failed when they ran out of fuel completely.
Yeah.
And it was a last desperate effort by the tanks, the panzer divisions, to resist Allied advances. And it failed. And nobody,
right.
even though it was horrible, of course, you know, nobody was saying, oh, let's stop World War II. It's just a made-up story.
Right. So it's not just a...
False analogy.
Yeah, it's not just a historically silly point
to
make.
It's
morally bankrupt.
Yes.
I think if you'd have taken a poll during the Battle of the Bulge, people would have said, yeah, we're stopping fascism. That's what we're doing.
Well,
so
they might have personalized it. We're stopping the Nazis or even said we hate the Germans, whatever. But the point is
yeah.
that World War II did not have the kind of ambiguities, both moral and realistically. World War II was a necessary war in most people's minds. Only people objecting to it that I knew of, I've ever heard of, were pacifists who objected to it because they object to all war.
Right.
Oh, we're going to try again with the calls. 231-8.
Jimoa.
Jimoa.
Good morning. Hello. Wow, we're striking out this morning. All right, well, keep
How
trying.
Is that? That's very weird. What's
really,
going on?
Really, we do take calls. 503-231-8187.
This is Talk Radio?
Are you this is Talk Radio.
And yet.
And yet.
Oh, it's such a boo moment. All right. Gosh, good thing I have lots of stuff to talk about. I really want to hear. We really want to hear. Abe really wants to hear from you at 231-8187. We don't know what the kind of little small technical glitch is. We know it is not Eduardo's fault.
No.
Eduardo, our very able board operator person.
Yeah, so keep trying. 231-8187.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, go ahead. Talk.
Do your thing.
What's next?
I got so much stuff. I want to talk about this.
Krugman, go ahead.
I want to talk about the Paul Krugman piece. Paul Krugman wrote a piece in yesterday's New York Times, which appeared today in the Oregonian. And essentially, he makes a very interesting argument. He says that after World War II, from about World War II on, though you had disagreements in the political structure, you had a kind of a bipartisan sense of the nation's direction and its foreign policy and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And this was built basically around the fact that during that period of time, the late 40s into the 50s, into the 60s, and even into the 70s, you had a tax structure that effectively was progressive
mm-hmm.
in terms of income taxes, and you had a very successful working class who could see its children moving on into the middle class and so on through hard work and through working in large plants like General Motors and Ford and so on. And within that context, the two parties could struggle. Now, as the class structure is altering, and realistically the middle class is being thrust into poorer and poorer situations, and a new elite class grows more and more distant from average Americans in its wealth and power, you no longer have a bipartisan policy. You end up with, instead of bipartisanship, instead of a reasonable friendliness, real class warfare. And ironically, of course, the Republicans use the term class warfare to stop the discussion of the kinds of problems that are being created by their policies.
Right.
And
the Democrats fall for it.
It's multiply ironic. But we do have callers coming in. 231-8187. Let's try Nancy again.
Nancy.
Hello?
Yes.
Hey!
All right.
It
Good
worked.
Morning.
Hi, Nancy.
Hey, you gentlemen. Joe, you're a master communicator. You always have been. Sometimes you talk too fast.
I apologize for that. Oh. I know I talk too fast.
I know you keep current with your college vocabulary, but some of us have let our college vocabularies get a little dusty.
Wait. You start out complimenting me, and then you tell me I talk too many big words? What?
Well, your brain slows down when you get real old, you know? It's better, but it slows down a little bit.
Okay.
You're talking about the health stuff, the state of Oregon. What I heard you say all sounded really good, but not to forget gardens. Not to forget gardens. Like my dear mom always said, you can pay your doctor bills or you can pay your grocery bills.
Ah.
And being as the Willamette Valley is the most fertile valley in the North American continent, all kind of gardens, not just the existing community gardens, but have every square spare inch of dirt in the state growing something.
I think that's a very good idea.
Definitely.
You know, there was, I don't know if it still exists, a law on the books in Oregon, actually in Portland,
right.
that I think was passed during World War II, but I'm not sure,
okay.
that essentially said any empty lot can be farmed until it has a greater use.
Very good, very good.
And I think it's interesting to see, I don't know if that law still exists, but I'll bet in a cooperative way rather than a confrontive way, people could probably do that.
Right.
They'd probably turn these empty lots into at least one season's crops.
Or sometimes people who have just enormous acreage in yards and they don't do anything in a very gentle, cooperative, you know, wouldn't you like some strawberries there? Community kind of stuff, you know?
Ooh, are you talking about taking over private property?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay.
if I had a little shack I was living in on 5 acres that I was doing nothing with, I would very much like somebody's to come in and to throw some carrots and potatoes in the ground.
I think it's a very good idea, and I really appreciate
it. I'd ask them to.
Okay, so have you signed?
And also, it's a terrible thing for society when the children of the city don't know what a strawberry plant looks like.
Really?
Most of them don't.
It is a shame. And have you signed the Hope petition yet?
No, I haven't seen it, but next time I go uptown, I certainly will.
Well, look for it. Sign
it. Also, locally, it's my favorite street in Portland, and it always has been, back to the 50s. You know, the block between Burnside and Ankeny Southwest, between 2nd and 3rd?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
yeah.
Burbadi's, the home apartments.
Yeah,
the
Shanghai
Center.
Tunnel, yeah.
I keep hearing from a number of people that's due to come down and be a parking lot.
Oh, that would stink.
That's terrible.
It?
Oh, yeah, that would be awful.
Thanks for the warning.
I wish someone would check it out.
Okay.
And also, right across the street from me, I'm looking at it. Guess what's going in? You'll never guess it in a million years. And
okay.
I hope I'm not overstepping my boundaries.
A Krispy Kreme.
A Tibetan Buddhist temple.
Oh, that's better
Amazing.
Than a Krispy Kreme.
Isn't Much
nice?
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not fattening. Hey, listen, thanks for the call, Nancy.
All right.
KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. That's Abe Proctor. It's Talk Radio. We do want to hear from you. I'm pushing the Hope petition drive for health care as a right in Oregon under the Constitution. I want you to sign the petition if you haven't. You need to call these people at 503-292-2223. And, again, 231-8187.
Yep. Mary, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to second the ladies who preceded me, her idea about gardens. In Vancouver, B.C. right now, there are people, including recovered drug addicts, who are farming in the backyards of people too rich and busy to farm their own backyards.
Really?
Wow.
And they're making lots of money doing it. And they're working out, and they're getting off their drugs. You call it drugs if you're addicted, and you call it meds if you're addicted. Anyway, it's like a Thai news service or something that I found this out on the Permaculture Guild website.
Oh,
well, actually,
Culture
on
Guild.
My notifications that I get from them, I'm on their daily notice of, you know, interesting stuff.
Well, I'm really glad you called, because, you know, there are a lot of positive. I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm often guilty of the sin of despair. There are a lot of positive things happening, and they really are under the radar of the mass media, and it's really important to know about them, and I'm glad you and Nancy have called.
Yeah, and the other hopeful thing, which I'm always telling people at my church, is because they tend to be very liberal and get all depressed and everything, is city repair, because it's really fun to play in the mud and build stuff, you know. And
absolutely.
Yeah, that organization does some brilliant things.
It's very fun, but they're
like
challenged
there's
right now too. One
Why?
Of the people on one of their sites got hurt badly.
Oh no!
He was hit by a car while he was working, and so I went to a fundraiser for him. So city repair always needs, you know, something from you that you can do. I mean, I worked on the receptionist for the receptionist at their headquarters.
Receptionist.
Yeah, the receptionist.
Well, I think their motto should be a little dabble, do ya?
Well, their other model is something like have more fun and then they'll want to be at your party, or, you know, that's how to deal with corruption.
Ah.
Just have more fun than them?
And that brings me to the real reason I sort of called, which is about health care.
You didn't sort of call, you did.
Well, yeah, I did call.
Okay.
And I used to be in work, I used to work in mental health, and my job was to help people get well without meds,
mm-hmm.
And to keep, to see if there was something in the environment you could change that would help people stay out of hospitalization, which is a, kind of a nightmare for everybody,
right.
Especially in the mental health area. And I would support this petition if the medical system as it stands was a little better at first do no harm. But it, because perhaps of the drug lobby, is not too good at first do no harm.
Well, I understand your point, but remember, this is, you don't have to go to a doctor. This makes health care available. Think of all the people, particularly children, who have a chronic disease or even possibly a life-threatening condition that never gets diagnosed. I'm talking about mental health here. I'm just talking about, you know, things like heart problems and so
on. And that's why I think that an endowed medical system that was diverse would be way better than a single payer, because you do have insurance companies mm-hmm. that will cover acupuncture and less harmful things now. But they're, you know, the fringy ones. They're not the main ones that are going to, you know, lobby Hillary Clinton and take over the world.
Agreed. But I think we've got to take some baby steps here. And a wonderful first step is something like this measure that would make healthcare accessible to everyone.
To establish the notion in the Constitution that people have a right to healthcare, that's pretty important. That's a good start, don't you think?
You know, I'm sorry. I'm just...
Okay.
Because, see, here's Bush wanting to screen the entire population for mental illness. You know why?
Because liberalism is a mental illness.
No, because his family is so connected to the drug companies, and they want to drug everybody.
Okay.
And the drugs are harmful. The side effects are horrific. The sales is that, you know, oh, it'll help your depression. And sometimes it does, but it depends on your individual genetics. And sometimes it sends you manic and you kill yourself.
I agree. I agree that we have a real problem with the drug lobby, and I certainly agree that that the whole way in which we face issues of health care, particularly mental illness issues, is not good. But I still maintain, and I think this is something that I'm surprised you would object to it, that the first step is guaranteeing health care. Now, how that health care is delivered in terms of the kinds, the modalities of treatment and so on is another step that needs to be taken soon. But let's first make sure that everyone has a right through the public system to access to health care.
Well, they kind of do, but then they can get in this octopusy thing that can, you know, have people disabled by meds. I mean, my dad was in a foster home where this woman was receiving this awful drug, and it's a long story I won't tell, but she got off it and was no longer disabled.
Okay, I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one, and I want to give other folks an opportunity, okay?
Yeah, yep.
Thanks, the call, though.
Thanks.
All right, let's go to another caller, 231-8187. Let's go to Nona. Hi, Nona.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
I am on the air?
Yes.
Yeah, you really are.
Oh.
What's on your mind?
I must have the wrong radio show on.
No sarcasm. No sarcasm.
No, I mean, I didn't mean it that way, Joe. I have some questions about the petition you were supporting.
Yeah.
I'm somebody that supports the single-payer system.
Yes.
And I'm somebody that would very much like to see healthcare insurance not tied to employment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certainly for having something that guarantees healthcare access to all Argonians.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what bothers me is when I look at the petition, it says conserve and strengthen the existing system of providing health insurance as a benefit of employment, which does away, as a constitutional amendment, I don't know what shall consider ways means, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of itself open-ended. But it seems to really support the existence of this kind of multiple insurance companies with and pharmaceutical companies with their own very different agenda than providing health care access. in the best possible way.
I think
the same thing is true when it says conserve and strengthen the existing healthcare system to the greatest extent possible.
Uh-huh.
I mean, both of those seem to me to be a way of saying the state cannot get involved in supporting anything that would be a single-payer system, that anything that would cut the insurance company out of the business is something that the state cannot do. And I think it's really important, given that everything from the New England Journal of Medicine to more conventional lefty kinds of publications have over and over again talked about both the problems with insurance companies making their own decisions about what kind of access is available
mm-hmm.
to different procedures, so that it's a mishmash. And the second thing is that the private insurance companies spend an enormous amount of money that's not on the direct delivery of health care. It's
administrative,
both administrative costs,
yep.
and I think it also has to do with the profits that the insurance companies have to insure to their investors,
yep.
if you don't mind the pun. So that a lot of money gets gobbled up in health care through the way in which it's delivered. So it bothers me a great deal to see a constitutional amendment that would apparently commit the legislature to those kinds of existing issues in the healthcare delivery system.
That's
in the
a very
United
good
States.
Point.
And I think that it's important. I mean, the second thing that's related to this is I think it's really important to not put this kind of micromanagement into the Constitution. That it's one thing to support some kind of health care, essential safeguard of human life and all that, and oblige the legislature to work that plan out. But I think when you start micromanaging, you get the kind of stuff that I just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
in which the Constitution supports the existing very inadequate healthcare delivery system. It's not the care, it's the delivery part.
No,
and the profit part. And I don't want to see that embedded in the Oregon Constitution. I think it's going to act as a barrier to any decent kind of healthcare delivery system in the United States.
I think you've hit on something essential here. That's really the big complaint that a lot of people in favor of a single-payer system have, that so much money is wasted on administrative costs, on bloated executive salaries, on maintaining this whole bureaucratic infrastructure that exists for no other reason but to, shuffle papers and add and subtract the business end of healthcare. And I agree. That's something that absolutely has to be addressed. That's perhaps the single most wasteful aspect of the modern American healthcare system.
Why do you want this in the
Let me explain why I'm supporting it. Because your criticism is very valid, absolutely valid. I want the principle that everyone is entitled to healthcare to be a part of the Constitution of the state. There are the implementation action section, which is 46A. Is troublesome, and I acknowledge that. But I don't see. Remember, we tried a few years ago to try to change our whole state system of healthcare to a single payer system through taxation. I don't see that happening right away. I see some incremental gain, significant incremental gain, by creating the notion of entitlement in the Constitution for every citizen of the state. Now, are there other things that need to be changed? You bet. This is not a panacea, and this certainly doesn't solve some of the very fundamental contradictions in healthcare delivery. But it's a beginning.
Well, let me tell you what the parallel for me is. The parallel for me is the current Medicare drug program.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
In which the idea has been, well, it gives the elderly access to drugs. Well, it has been an absolute problem for small pharmacies. It has been an absolute problem for people who join these different programs because it's been said over and over again, they join a program, the insurance provider, because there are, I don't know how many there are in the state of Oregon, for example, the insurance provider can at their will decide that some drug that actually encouraged that person to sign up with that particular program is no longer going to be offered by that particular pharmaceutical program.
That's certainly true.
And it means that, and you have no right to change your affiliation with a pharmaceutical insurance program for the rest of the year. I mean, that's an insane way of establishing a program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that happens is that the pharmacy acts, you know, presumably what they do is they look at their costs and they say, well, we're spending too much money on drug X. Too many people are using it. Let's drop it from the formula. Formulas, that's what I mean. Anyway,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
Formulary or whatever.
Yeah. Drop it from the formulary.
Yeah.
And so the person who joined in order to get that drug, because the other 16 companies in that area weren't offering it, or they weren't offering some other of the six drugs that an elderly person was taking, is up a creek without mm-hmm. a paddle. I mean, and well, I think the same kind of argument was made for that drug program. We're going to give the elderly drugs. We're not going to think about the details. But as some famous person said, the devil is in the details.
Well, not only that, but the Medicare prescription drug program, you know, while wrapping itself in the mantle of the noble goal of providing prescription drug coverage to senior citizens, did so by ensuring that the profit margins of the pharmaceutical industry would remain intact. So it turned into something of an enormous windfall.
That's
for
right.
the
That's right.
yes for the pharmaceutical industry in the name of this noble end. And it sounds to me, and I'm going to have to do some more research, like this ballot measure, while you know having a noble end, might preserve an essentially wasteful delivery system.
This one, the ballot measure, initiative number 40.
Mm-hmm.
may preserve it. That's what concerns me.
Yeah.
That you have, I mean, I don't know, I only know one of the people in terms of what their affiliation has been. And, you know, that person was affiliated with a large, not national, but multi-state, non-profit healthcare delivery system.
Yeah, you're talking about Mitch Greenleaf.
About
here.
Mitch. But, I have no idea what the interests of, the other two chief petitioners are, and whether they've thought through these issues. But who benefits from this in the way that you were just saying?
Well,
the pharmaceutical company benefits.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's really the issue. The issue for me is whether or not you're setting into the Constitution things that in fact support things that are the very problem, the very reason, or one of the very reasons that Oregonians don't have access to health care is because, one, it's tied to employment, which makes it very difficult unless it's a reasonably sized employer who can make some kind of a contribution. And secondly, because tying it to conserving the existing health care system, who knows what that means? I mean, this we're going to need a kind of Supreme Court decision our current justices to try to find out what was the intention of people when they said to the existing healthcare system, do they need private insurance?
I think you're raising a number of important questions.
I really think that it's a bad thing to go halfway towards something. If I would really support something that was paragraph one. Section 46.
And not 46A.
And not 46A, because 46A is micromanaging stuff that really are core political issues, core issues of political economy, core issues of justice and fairness, and whether we don't want to continue to build, at least to me, a great plutocracy. You know, we already have seen it in the military production. We see it in the privatizing of military adventures abroad. You know, we see it in the delivery of pharmaceuticals to the elderly. I don't think we need more of it emblazoned in the Constitution. Anyway, I really would like you to kind of think about that.
Definitely.
And
no.
Well, I first of all, I really think your criticisms are good. I have to confess that my enthusiasm here is based on the first sections, that is section 46 of this measure, and that the details that you raise, the questions you raise, are valid questions. What I'm going to try to do is reach out to Greenlick and others to comment and respond. And I really appreciate the call, because this is one of the more thoughtful, the sets of questions you've raised are very thoughtful and very important.
Oh, Joe, you're a dear.
I am a dear, and I'm also going to continue to support the petition. But
well,
I hear,
you're crazy.
But I hear your criticism, and I really
you're
appreciate
crazy.
It. I know I'm mad. I'm insane.
You're really crazy. You know, I know that you've been interested in these health care issues,
yes.
And I think that... I know what your politics are, but maybe you've gotten more and more conservative over your old age. And you need to kind of think through the consequences of what you support.
Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you for the call, Nona.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I think she's raised the question about this, and I think we need to get some people from this sponsoring organization on this program.
I think she's raised some...
This is too important not to investigate.
You know what? She's probably right.
I think she is right.
You know, but
she is
I guess I feel like an overwhelming need, and she's criticizing this very idea, an overwhelming need to enshrine in the Constitution the right to health care kind of pushes me in a certain direction.
Well, I feel that same push, too. She's pointing out that we would also enshrine in the Constitution this wasteful private health care delivery system.
I'm afraid she's right.
We absolutely need to address this.
Damn!
Yeah.
I hate
to see if I can get these people on show next week.
I hate that.
All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9 on Between the Covers, host Marion Barisonic interviews historian, broadcaster, and writer Simon Schama, author of Rough Crossings, Britain, the Slaves, and the American Revolution.
He's a conservative historian.
Oh. At 9:30, Julie Sabatier interviews David Bloom, international ethanol expert, whose forthcoming book is Alcohol Can Be a Gas.
Woo!
At 10, here a special...
Well, it could be a gas.
Could be. At 10, here
it's very volatile.
It is.
Yes.
It gives off a gas.
Yes.
At 10, here a special edition.
It is a gas. It's under certain conditions.
Yeah.
Warm it up, you know.
Right. At 10, here a special edition of Stage and Studio featuring Crime Pays, an award-winning look at who's getting rich from U.S. prisons. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, hear an interview with a reporter from The Guardian about U.S. forces launching their largest military offensive in Afghanistan since the fall of the Taliban in late 2001. Wasn't Afghanistan liberated? Why are we launching a military
offensive? No.
But I digress. Also, a member of the United Teachers of New Orleans talks about how control of many Louisiana schools is being given to private charter organizations. And a look at the destruction of public housing units for the poor in New Orleans. All that and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, don't we have to do something weird? What is the secret word? We have to say the secret word?
We have a delay now, so people can't up. All right. So what you just heard was a test of our obscenity deletion system. So
and it worked.
All right.
You never heard the word.
You didn't hear my obscenity. Ha-ha.
Whoa. All right, good.
231-8187 is the number to call. We got a lot on the table today.
We do. I want to confess to something because it's important.
Okay.
I have not thought through the implications of this constitutional amendment that Nona raised. That our caller Nona raised, and they are important. I would like to hear now from some people who are strong supporters of the initiative number 40 to defend this. And I don't know if we're going to be able to get them on today or not, but it's really important that we have this conversation. And I really appreciate the challenges to the initiative measure that our friend Nona put in there. I'm still, in the sense that I still believe that we need to enshrine the right to health care in the Constitution. I'm still going to support it. But as our caller Nona says, maybe I'm crazy.
I think she's right, man. The more as I read this over, this looks like a stealth amendment. I listen to some of this stuff. Conservatives strengthen the existing health care system to the greatest extent. Conservatives strengthen the existing system of providing health insurance as a benefit of employment. This does nothing to address the basic flaws in the healthcare system, the biggest of which is tying healthcare to having a job.
Okay, we need some knowledgeable supporters of this measure to call us. If you are a friend of or know someone, if you can reach out to any of the chief petitioners, right now would be a good time to do this. State Representative Mitch Greenlick, State Senator Ben Westland, State Senator Alan Bates, any one of those people. Would be a great guest, and there may be many, many other people who have ideas about Hope for Oregon Families, the initiative number 40. And we do want to hear from you. And I am caught somewhat flat-footed in that I don't have a defense for the criticisms that our friend Nona made.
Good. And
I
we,
don't.
This is too important to ignore. So
absolutely.
All
so
right.
Let's
we're
hope that happens.
We're going to try and line us up for next week.
We'll carry it on next week. If we can't do it now, I'd like to hear some calls on that now. In fact, if Eduardo Cannon is somebody who has that kind of information, we'll jump him ahead. Okay?
Yeah, because we can do that.
We can do that. We have power.
Right.
All right? And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave right now and go in the other room and try to call one of these guys.
All right.
I really do that.
Okay.
Okay? So
yeah.
You can you carry on?
Yeah.
And take
I,
calls?
Can I carry on?
Are you capable?
503-231-8187 is the number to call. It's now the Abe Proctor Show for the next few moments because Joe's leaving the room. Okay, lots of stuff on the table today. This healthcare measure that apparently looks a lot better than it smells. I'm going to have to come out and say I'm against it until somebody can assure me that it's going to mean something other than a perpetuation of the same broken system that we have right now. So another thing I wanted to talk about today is our favorite subject here on the Dave and Joe Show, the Democrats. The Democrats have a new slogan. Here it is. Together, America can do better. Well, I don't know if I can think of a more limp slogan than that. Really, there's been a lot of talk right now, especially among commentators on the right, that all the Democrats do is complain. All the liberal opposition does today is complain. Nobody has a cohesive alternative vision to what the Republicans are doing. And that, all that is true. But I'm telling you right now, they don't really need to have an alternative vision right now. This next election, this year, 2006, and again in 2008, should be more about holding the Republican government accountable for what they have done and preserving the separation of powers inherent in our Constitution.
Why do you hate America so much?
I don't hate America, Joe. I love America, and that's why these issues need to be addressed. In fact, Newt Gingrich proposed a much better slogan than the one the Democrats came up with. He said the slogan for the Democrats should be "Had Enough." That's perfect.
Well, it is.
It is.
It is. Simple, direct, and unclear.
Yeah. Right. Simple, direct, and unclear, but really it focuses the attention where it should be, which is on the misdeeds of this Republican government.
Okay. I've asked our able boss, Kathleen, to attempt to reach out to the people who are the petitioners on this measure. And I actually apologize for not having them on the air today. I didn't realize how important the details in this measure are. Our friend Nona called our attention to it, and hopefully we'll be able to get them today. If not today, then next time. 231-8187. We got several callers. Who's next? Gordon.
I think I am.
Hey.
I wanted to comment originally about the gardens, and then I have some comments about the health.
Okay. Sure.
I have a large yard. I can't get down on my knees anymore. All I do is cut the grass.
Uh-huh.
And I would love for somebody to come in and use the area in my yard. It would be a great, because it would look nice for the neighborhood as well. I could get a
You could get a share.
Vegetables, and I would love that. I have tried to mention this to people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have 65 feet by 95 feet.
Wow. Yeah, that could feed a family of five forever.
And but we need some way to hook people up together.
Well, here's what you do. This is what I would suggest. A couple of things. First of all, very simple. Put a sign on your lawn saying space available to farm, and then put your phone number up. Secondly, get in touch with your local elementary or middle school and propose to a biology teacher or a science teacher or even a social studies teacher, anybody really, that they enlist some kids to come help farm this plot of land that you have.
Okay. Well, the problem with that latter one, though, it's a good idea, is that school is out during the best part of the growing season.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, that makes a real problem. But I think that what you're proposing is great. I'll bet there are groups that are interested in this kind of thing. We just don't happen to know them.
Yeah.
And I think that probably if you were to call any one of the small nursery outfits that are into organic gardening, they might have really good suggestions.
Okay.
You know, and I think what you're offering to do is an excellent idea, and I think you should insist that you get a share.
Right.
Just because you're providing the land.
Sure. Another resource for you might be the city's Office of Neighborhood Involvement. I'm sure that either the office itself or some of the organizations at work that it works with might give you some pointers.
I think you really should go to a lot of trouble to have this happen. I think you'd be very happy with it yourself. I think other people would be really delighted and very grateful. I think it's a wonderful idea, and in fact, I think it could be the start of something really big and really good.
Pay it forward, Gordon.
Okay. Well, here's the other thing I want to talk about. You know, Lyndon Johnson ran into this problem when he created the Medicare system.
Right.
And he found out that he couldn't get it through Congress. You know, he was an expert on Congress, unless he dealt with the insurance companies.
Right.
Now, the way I heard from what you've talked about in the last half hour, since I've been on, I've heard, is the people that wrote this tried to get something that they could pass.
Yes.
And I think they're just trying to deal with the political reality, because if you try to take on the insurance companies and all of those folks, they will spend. And that's the same thing that happened to Hillary Clinton and her husband Bill when they tried it. There was massive opposition. So, you know, I think it would have been better if they had just put a line into the Constitution guaranteeing health care as right, period.
Yeah. And that was our caller Nona's point, too.
Right. I think that's really the problem, because when you enshrine, I'm probably now going to have to vote against it and probably won't sign it. Because even though we really need it, but we have to deal with some of the real issues, because, you know, I don't care. I don't know, because we have the highest percentage spent on medical care. But if you look at all the criterion about countries around the world, we don't rate very well. So there's something really wrong with this health care.
Oh, there's no question about that. And I think that I'm torn here now, I have to admit. I think that fundamentally we always end up making arrangements that enrich certain privileged and powerful organizational structures. It isn't an issue about doctors, by the way. The doctors are crushed in the middle most of the time.
I agree.
But it is about pharmaceutical companies. It is about for-profit healthcare delivery systems and so on. And I think that we really need good legislation on this. Whether this piece is that good legislation or not, I have to admit, I'm a little troubled. So what we're going to do is try to get some more discussion on it. And I really, again, want to express appreciation to Nona for her criticism and you for your doubts about it. And hopefully we'll have a lot of calls on it, and maybe we'll get some experts on.
Have a good day, Joe.
Thanks, Ron.
And Dave.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, we now have an Abe and Joe exclusive. Live from our control room, we have Chiamella.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Hi, I actually tried calling twice earlier.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was at work. I just wanted to say, just kind of get on this, Ghana is playing against the U.S. in 2 days, I believe.
Thursday morning, yeah.
Yeah, so the first,
this is the World Cup, folks.
Yep.
Yeah, the first African nation to become independent against the biggest imperialist of the whole world. So that'll be exciting.
And Ghana's playing with some passion and some fire. They beat the Czechs the other day.
Yeah.
Impressively.
Even I know that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, I think I heard somewhere that the guy that wrote the song, the Haji Girl song, he actually apologized about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's good.
I don't think they caught his name, but some guy said, I'm sorry for doing that. So I think they actually did find the guy. And I think they were trying to find a way to reprimand him, but I didn't really get too much on that. But that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thank you.
You bet. Little update on the World Cup.
That's right.
You like the World Cup.
Oh, I love the World Cup. I've just been in a soccer haze. It's been grand.
Well,
getting up early to watch
the
game.
Italians are hot. See, even I know that.
No, the Italians and Americans played to a draw.
It
was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
Big Red. What do they call themselves? Evil Red? Large Red?
The Italians?
Yeah, they have some kind of red.
No, actually, they call themselves the Blues.
Really?
But that's okay.
I'm wrong?
Yeah.
I ever been wrong?
The Azzurri, they call themselves. The
really?
Blues. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, so I was lied to.
Yeah, it was a brilliant match, but I won't get into that.
All right, we're going to try to focus in on this healthcare issue, because I think it is very important. There is, what we're talking about is Measure 40. Essentially, it's an effort to create a right in the Constitution for universal healthcare in the state of Oregon. The problem that's been raised is whether it enshrines the vast world of middlemen, insurance brokers, pharmaceutical companies, and so on in the process, and doesn't dispense with them in some reasonable way, because they're the real cost aspect and the real problem in many ways. 231-8187 is the number to call. And we got who? I lost track.
Yeah, I did too.
Oh, that's bad. Who's
did
our
talk
who's
about
our
soccer?
We don't.
Oh, okay.
No. All right.
So, yeah, there's lots of things on the
table. And Kathleen is trying to reach out to the people who are supporters of Measure 40. Mm-hmm. And we'll jump them ahead if they get a chance to be on. And if not, we'll pick it next week.
Yeah,
it's really important.
Well,
really important issue.
It is. I'd have to say, based on just the discussion we've engendered here today, that I'm very suspicious.
Well, I'm not. See, I don't have a suspicion here. I think what one of our callers just recently made a point, and that is that what you end up doing, and this is a real problem in American politics, is you end up making a deal with the devil to get something decent through. Now, Medicare, the original Medicare legislation, which was a deal with the devil and has many negative aspects, turned out to be an important program and a good program in many, many, many ways. Now, the most recent deal that the Bush administration engineered is... Well, it's terrible.
Well, but look at what the Medicare program didn't do. What the Medicare program didn't do was preserve a private structure of for-profit delivery. Medicare is administered entirely by the federal government.
That's
at a much more efficient rate than the private sector is capable
That's
of doing.
That's true.
And this ballot measure here in Oregon has a whole bunch of very mushy, wishy-washy language saying things about strengthening and preserving the employment-based healthcare system and the current private-based delivery system, both of which have to be done away with. Have to be done away with. Why is it that you're only entitled to health care if you have a job or you're in the family of somebody who has a job? I mean, that is the biggest single problem with the modern delivery system. And this measure does nothing to address that. And it's a half measure that I think we can't afford. All the more so because this would enshrine it in the Constitution. And it's a hell of a lot harder to change the Constitution than it is to change a legislative statute.
You might be right. I don't want to give up on this. I just really want health care to be.
Yeah, I know how much you want it and how much I want it and how much most of us want it. But this sort of half measure, I want to find out more about this organization that's sponsoring the bill.
One of the things we have lined up is we haven't been able to reach Mitch Greenlicher or the other two chief sponsors at this point. But we have reached the offices of the people who are supporting this. And we are going to get a call from one of their people.
Okay.
Hopefully this will be a knowledgeable person, and hopefully they can answer the kinds of questions we're raising.
Good. Good.
So that would be good.
Very good.
Anyway, this is the best of community radio that we've...
Oh, absolutely.
This is really good.
Yeah, this is an organic...
Organic?
Organic discussion.
Filthy organic. 231-8187. You want to stay tuned. This is KBOO, 90.7, your FM dial. It's talk radio. It's the real thing. A little less flashy than maybe you'd like, but absolutely real. Abe Proctor, Joe Uris, on the air, looking for answers to the question of whether or not y'all should be supporting Measure 40, whether you should be signing the petition for it, which essentially would enshrine in the Constitution health care, but also, according to critics of the proposal, enshrine the existing health care delivery system.
So Greenlick and Bates, what party do they belong to and where they come
Mitch
from?
Mitch Greenlick is a Democrat.
He's a Democrat.
Now, I have to express my conflict of interest here, which I have to say our guest Nona probably was aware of. Full disclosure here, both Nona, all three of us have taught for, and I was at once a student of Nona and Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Mitch Greenlick ran the Kaiser Research Foundation for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And after that, he went on to work at the OHSU, Oregon University, Healthcare University, mm-hmm. whatever the hell it's called these days. And Mitch Greenlick is an excellent medical sociologist. And he is a member of the legislature on the West Side. And he's a very bright guy, and I base my support on my trust of him. I have to admit, it's not a rational, it's not a rational faith.
You're telling me you speak and behave irrationally sometimes?
Never.
All right.
Never.
Goodness.
I'm only rational, but occasionally some. But the thing is, I want to be clear about this. Mitch does not, to the best of my knowledge, have any ties with the. With the profit-making aspect of healthcare. I just don't think that's the issue here. I think he may be thinking, and I don't want to speak for him, that you begin here and you work for something better. And I think this is a common problem in trying to evolve a legislation that can be passed, that can be supported, and that can actually happen. And he's got bipartisan support for this. So that's a little bit of what this is about.
It seems to me that... price is too high.
Okay.
But
okay.
We need to find out more.
We
do. What we're trying to do.
Right. 231-8187 is the number to call.
We have any callers, Eduardo?
Especially if you know. Okay, let's go out to David. Hi, David.
David,
you're on the
morning.
Air.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, I apologize. I'm not an expert in the area. And in fact, I just don't even really know the legislative in and outs. And so I'll try to be brief in case.
Okay. Can you get real close to your phone here?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just want to address the subject very broadly. And you just mentioned bipartisanship, for example. And,
uh-huh.
and I think that's a good segue for me in that about 3 months ago or so, you had a program about trying to cross over and get both right and left to speak together.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, it was the only time I've actually called in and had about 30 seconds. I define myself as a socially progressive conservative Christian. And I want to speak out generally to the public that this is a very good area for us generally to work together.
Now you're talking about the health care issue
now.
Healthcare issue. Yeah,
I would agree. There's definitely common ground to be had here.
Exactly, and I do want to make an appeal. I remember an article back in JAMA magazine back in the 80s, and it's made reappearances in various articles recently on the physical death of Jesus Christ. And I remember the abstract, first of all, saying, "Well, one might wonder why an article on Jesus Christ would be in a scientific magazine," and their reasoning was essentially that there was probably no other Western figure that had such an influence on the idea of healing. And I want to appeal to conservative Christians out there that it behooves us. We're called to take care of the sick. And this is an area where we need to realize that all people must be treated with equality, with goodness. And it is not happening. It's economically okay. determined. And that's a very sad thing.
This is well said, David.
Well said, David. I'm gonna let you go, not because I disagree with you, but because we do have Mitch Greenlick on the line. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much, Mitch. Are you there? We're gonna get him momentarily.
I guess so.
Hopefully.
Yeah, David was right.
I think this is one of those issues where potentially the most conservative Christians, if they really are followers of Jesus, would have to come on board, not about this particular constitutional amendment, mm-hmm. but about the idea of universal health care.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're looking for Mitch.
David's comments also dovetail with the Paul Krugman article you mentioned earlier. And this is indicative of the divide uh-huh. that plagues us. The economic differentiation has become so extreme that there's really no choice but to find common ground on these things that we all need.
I agree, and we're fiddling with our equipment now, trying to get Mitch. He's trying to reach us. We're trying to reach him.
Okay.
So that's what's happening.
All right.
To you in the audience. 231-8187 is the number to call. We're still looking for other callers. We're focusing our attention on this Measure 40, which is a constitutional amendment, which would essentially enshrine health care for universally for the citizens of Oregon. The question that's being raised by a previous caller, Nona, was the question of what the details imply for the support of the existing health care delivery system and the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah. And what kind of health care will it enshrine?
And we don't know where Mitch is in all of this.
All right. So do we have an... Okay, stand by.
We're standing by.
So
that's what's going on.
It's kind of a shame we had to cut off David because I think what David had to say is really touches a nerve in the current political discourse, and that is, you know, where will the Christian conservative vote go? So far, it's gone to the right in support of things like banning gay marriage, for example.
Yeah.
But I think David hits closer to the heart of Jesus' message when he says it is our duty to care for those less fortunate, particularly the sick. And I think if we can get more Christians out there to realize that fact, that might be, give progressive causes like universal health care the boost that they need.
You know, actually, this is true. And one of the most interesting things historically was the development within fundamentalism of the populist movement. And the fact that William Jennings Bryan was a liberal on many issues and a reactionary on many others based on his fundamentalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, in fact, there are areas where there can be unity, a deliberate and intentional unity around social concerns. I don't think there'll ever be agreement about gay rights, about many issues.
Right.
But I think there can be a unity around human rights in the sense of the right to health care, for example, as
sure.
something that that everybody could support. And I think there are other issues that are like that and that
sure.
need to be developed. Because the rate that the rate we're going now, we're going to end up with a horrible know-nothing system with disastrous results for the survival of a decent America.
Agreed. The heart of Jesus' teachings while he was alive was essentially a progressive message.
Yeah.
Care for the sick, care for the poor, turn the money changers out of the temple.
You Christians.
Oh, that's true. Our civic our civic temple right now in Washington is crammed with money changers who need to be thrown out.
You've noticed that.
Yeah, so I don't understand. I don't understand why more Christians aren't flocking to the progressive cause. And I understand there's quite a few who are, but maybe they're not as numerous or as vocal as those on the other side.
I think their focus has been drawn to these angry issues.
Yeah.
Which they see as threatening to their moral and personal lifestyle.
Yes.
And I think that's been a manipulated thing for quite a while now.
Oh, it's absolutely true.
And I think that that's something which can be overcome on issues that have universal appeal. And I think health care would be one of those.
Yes, agreed.
So that's, you know, that's pretty important. And I agree that David was a good call. What we're trying to do now, right now, folks, is to make sure we finally get through. Mitch is trying to reach us. We're trying to reach Mitch. Mitch Greenlick, who's a member of the, he's a representative, and he's one of the three chief petitioners for this Measure 40, which I still am supporting, but which has in it the second section, 46B, I believe it is, which essentially says let's keep the existing system rather than creating an alternative system as we enshrine health care as a right.
Which
criticism was made by a caller, Nona, a very knowledgeable woman, who said, hey, look, all this is going to do is enrich the same people. Oh,
all
great.
Right.
We
Mitch
now do have Mitch Greenlick on the air. Mitch, are you there?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Mitch.
Good morning.
Hi. How you doing, guys?
Hey, we're doing good. We need to hear from you. We just had a call from Nona, a friend of yours, a former colleague. And
oh, I remember her. Yeah.
Sure. And she was very critical of the measure that, that the HOPE measure that you're supporting. And we need to know how you respond to her criticism, which was basically that the second section, 46B, enshrines the existing system and will make the provider, pharmaceutical companies, et cetera, more powerful and rich.
Well, the meat of her argument was that the measure would enshrine health care tied to employment, and it would enshrine the current private-based delivery system.
All right. Well, first of all, the only thing that stays permanently in the Constitution is the first section. It's the thing that guarantees the right to health care to all Oregonians.
But if that's the case, then why have the second section at all?
It's because there are two reasons for having the second section. One is it commands the legislature to create a plan. And then it just gives a set of basic principles to be considering while the plan is being thought of. There are three sets of problems in the healthcare system. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Cost, quality, and the fact that 17% of the population is excluded from the system. So right now, there are 600,000 people in Oregon without fundamental access to healthcare. But there are 2.9 million people with access to healthcare. And you have a strategic decision. Do you start with the utopian model, such as Measure 23 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
which ended up getting about 25% of the population to vote for it, or do you start with an incremental model that says let's solve the access problem first, and then you have the legitimacy to attack the inadequacy of the structure of the healthcare system? And you know, it's a sort of you pays your money, you take your choice model.
What I think a lot of what Nona's wondering, and I'm wondering, and I think a lot of our listeners are wondering, is what are the implications of amending the Constitution for an incremental model? Isn't that sort of doesn't the amending the Constitution carry a sort of finality?
Well, the only thing that stays in the Constitution, as I said, is the first section, the fundamental rights statement. The second section is sunsetted in 2012.
The second section.
Okay, I'm really glad you said that because
yes,
it was unclear
yes.
to me.
Yeah, that whole second section gets sunsetted. It's like space junk. Either the legislature's done something or they haven't done something, and whichever it is, that section disappears, and all that's left is the basic fundamental right to health care.
Well, that makes all the difference.
Well, that makes a tremendous difference. I'm really glad we were able to reach you. And I should say that I was a little sloppy here. I made an assumption that everybody would understand this measure. Turned out I didn't understand it as well as I should.
It's only one page long, but it still is pretty complicated in its implications.
You're generous. I do appreciate your call. So let me just recapitulate here, make sure I understand. What you're saying is that the first section, which enshrines in the Oregon Constitution the right to health care for every citizen of the state, stays permanently in the Constitution.
That's
the
right.
The second section, which is the implementation section, is sunsetted for 2012.
Right.
And then it's the task of the legislature to struggle through exactly how that health care is delivered.
Exactly. And my perspective is that that the state of Oregon doesn't have the legitimacy right now to attack the problem of the screwed upness of the health care system and the inefficiencies of the health care system. It's only when it accepts the responsibility to ultimately the final responsibility to make sure everybody gets care, that it then has the legitimacy to attack the inefficiencies in the system.
So you're setting up the legislature to wrestle with this problem at some point in the future.
Yeah, and they will or they won't. I mean, if they end up not wrestling with it, then it'll move to the courts.
Right, because it'll be in the Constitution, and then the courts will say how it has to be implemented.
Exactly.
I see.
Oh, okay.
All right.
See, we enshrined the right to a common school of public education in 1859. I wasn't there. It was the founders. And we're simply trying to do the same thing with health care at this point.
Ah, so that's a good analogy. So you're saying you don't decide how it's going to be financed. You just say it shall be, and then you insist that it's the responsibility of the legislative body as the representative of the people to figure out that process.
That's exactly what it does.
All right, so let me ask you this. Assuming this measure passes, then, are you and your fellow sponsors going to work towards generating a groundswell of support to do away with the current messed up system, delivery system?
Well, I mean, again, Joe, you know, we've talked over the time. I'm an incrementalist, and the fact is there are 2.9 million people that have health insurance right now, and some of them get very good health care. So what we want to do is build on the strengths of the system and take out the weaknesses. For example, the pharmaceutical industry, which Nona mentioned, is a terrible problem, and we need to attack that. And I've been trying to attack them on various dimensions. We need to continue to attack them. But for some of us, health care works very well.
Mitch Greenlick, I really appreciate your call. This is, I have to say, this is KBOO working at its best.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're having a real discussion. Nona's criticisms are valid criticisms. Absolutely valid. Your point is, though, that paragraph one, that essentially creates the Constitution of the State of Oregon is amended by creating new sections 46 and 46A. 46 says health care is an essential safeguard of human life and dignity, and there is an obligation for the state to ensure that every Oregon resident has access to effective and affordable health care as a fundamental right. Sections 46A essentially says then that they should adopt a plan, and then it describes the elements of that plan. And that part, which is the implementation section, is sunsetted for December 31st, 2012. The part that you say is most important is the idea of amending the Constitution to make health care a right.
That is the thing that needs to be in the Constitution. That other stuff doesn't need to be in it.
Okay.
So this is a foot in the door, as it were.
Exactly.
Okay.
I really appreciate the chance to talk with you, Mitch.
Well, thank you guys for covering this today.
Oh, we're really delighted to do it. And thanks very much for the call.
All right. So take care.
Yeah, thank you. You know, this is very good for me. This helps clarify my thinking, and I think yours as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm back to my original position. I'm going to support an issue.
Yeah, I will,
40.
Too.
And I'm going to urge people. I'm still, despite Nona's valid criticisms, I'm still going to urge people to sign this petition. And if you don't have one or you don't know where to get one, call 503-292-2222. 292-2223.
And if I may say so.
Yes. You may say so. This is your show.
This is why you members are members of KBOO. And of those of you who aren't, that's why you should become a member.
This is
what you just heard on KBOO.
This is serious talk radio, man.
Oh, yeah.
This is the kind of stuff we ought to have.
Absolutely.
We do have it. You and I do this.
Yeah.
Pat, pat on the back.
Pat, pat, pat.
All right. So
we're so cool.
Oh yeah, we're great. but what I really appreciated was we had two very knowledgeable, very aware people. The first making a serious criticism of my relatively casual support of the Hope constitutional amendment. The result is that we had the sponsor of the amendment. We were able to reach out to him and have him come on and explain how he perceives it. Mm-hmm. And how he sees it as working as a step, more than a step in the right direction, as the enshrining of the right to health care, and making clear that the other part, the part that Nona was so concerned about, is simply implementation. And that is the part that sunsetted in 2012.
Wow.
So
the moral, Joe, is read the whole page.
Yes. All right. So we want to go to the next caller. Crystal, you're on the air.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Now I'm quite sure I understand why people keep listening to their radios and not the phone. Because you're not in the phone.
They sit there and they're
listening to the radio and waiting to hear.
Well, Crystal, don't criticize the system. Tell us what you want to
talk
about.
Well, I just want to say, you know, that part isn't getting out when you tell people how to get on.
We'll try to make that more clear.
Yeah, that part's missing because they're totally lost.
Okay.
Anyway, I was only able to do it because I'm using one headphone.
Good.
So, my question actually is, whatever happened to your email address?
You know, we died back in the day when I had a functioning laptop computer that I could bring in here to the show.
We're poor.
We still have it. It's still Joe and Abe.
I tried to.
At yahoo.com, yeah.
I tried sending you an email last week, and it bounced back.
Really?
Really?
Well, you know what, then? I'm going to create a new email address, and I will give it to you guys next week.
Okay, because I'd appreciate that, because most of the time I can't call.
Yeah, we will try to do that. We're also going to...
And I have one other question,
sure.
A comment about the amendment. It sounds to me like it's one of those constitutionally illegal things because it's covering two things, and you can't do two things in a constitution.
As I read it, all it does constitutionally, as I read it, says that the legislative assembly by law shall adopt a plan that incrementally expands health care coverage so that every Oregon resident is able to obtain effective and affordable health care on a regular basis.
And then there's paragraph two.
And then there's paragraph two, which simply is an implementation.
Guidelines.
It's guidelines.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, let the courts sort
and
that
I'm
out.
I'm afraid that's going to be another one of those things where it gets, you know, everybody votes for it and then it goes, oops.
No, I think this one's going to work.
But if the existing healthcare industry challenges it on those grounds, they will essentially be challenging a set of guidelines that operate right now in its favor. So that's kind of ironic.
No, actually, I don't think that there's going to be that kind of problem. I think this is rather clever legislation.
Actually, it makes a whole lot more sense now that we talked to Mr. Greenlake.
Well, yes, I'm glad he managed to get hold of him.
Listen, we have to sign off, Crystal. Thank you for the call.
Goodbye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
I really had a good time today.
I think it was a good show.
Yeah.
I think it was a good show. I really appreciate the call from Nona and from Mitch, both of whom helped me clarify my
thinking.
Absolutely. And I'm saying to you folks, sign the petition, support initiative number 40.
Absolutely. Thursday morning, Ghana versus the United States. Tune in.
All right, and stick around for the greatest programming in the world on KBOO, listener-supported radio.
Coisas que só o coração pode entender. Fundamental é mesmo o amor. É impossível ser feliz sozinho. O resto é mar. É tudo que nem sei contar. São coisas lindas que eu tenho pra te dar. Fundamental é mesmo o amor. É impossível ser feliz sozinho. Da primeira vez era a cidade, na segunda o cais e a eternidade. Agora eu já sei da onda que se ergueu no a noite vem nos envolver.
and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Listener-sponsored community radio, 90.7 FM. Stay tuned. Coming up, we have Between the Covers hosts, Marian Barasinic interviews historian, broadcaster, and writer Simon Shama, author of Rough Crossings, Britain, the Slaves, and the American Revolution. And at 9:30, Julie Sabatier interviews David Bloom, international ethanol expert, whose forthcoming book is Alcohol Can Be a Gas. At 10, hear a special edition of Stage and Studio, featuring Crime Pays, an award-winning look at who's getting rich from U.S. prisons. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, hear an interview with a reporter from The Guardian about U.S. forces launching their largest military offensive in Afghanistan since the fall of the Taliban in late 2001. Also, a member of the United Teachers of New Orleans talks about how control of many Louisiana schools is being given to private charter and organizations, and a look at the destruction of public housing units for the poor in New Orleans. I'm Jake, and this is the start of the Tuesday morning radio zine. Thanks for listening to KBOO. Stay tuned.